Paul Duane's Irish folk horror film, All You Need Is Death, is now playing in select theaters and on digital from XYZ Films. Beyondfest says, "You'll never be able to hear another folk tune without shivering in fear." David Jenkins of Little White Lies calls it grimly refreshing and confident. You can tell that everyone involved in the making really understood and appreciated the assignment. Watch the genuinely horrifying All You Need Is Death, available everywhere you buy movies.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
For every horror title to hit VOD, there are countless others that end up DOA. Development Hell is a podcast dedicated to unearthing these plagued horror productions to find out what went wrong and if they still got a shot at the green light. My name is Josh Coringa, and I am your host. I am a filmmaker located in Toronto, Canada. This podcast is brought to you by the Anatomy of a Scream Pod Squad. Anatomy of a Scream are a female-founded, queer-positive horror site offering reviews and analysis. Today, we have a very special visitor slash guest, Emily Gagne. I have known her, I think, 20-something years, and she is my frequent collaborator. She directed a film with me last year, and one of my best friends. Hi, Emily. How are you?
I'm good. H2O, 20 years later, it all comes around.
Oh my God, blood is thicker than water. Literally, it really is.
Especially fake blood.
Oh yeah, or corn syrup. I feel like that stuff is viscous. Emily, who are you? What do you do? What's your childhood trauma?
That's a heavy question. Not even the childhood trauma part, but like, just who am I? Like, you know, I'm an existential person. So I don't know. I do a lot of stuff. I mean, I've made a film with you, which is called Best Friends Forever, which you probably have mentioned on this podcast before. Mm-hmm. Also, I'm a writer, and sometimes I write creative stuff like I have with you, but also sometimes I write about horror movies. Like, I have a column on Nightmare on Film Street, which is called Final Girl Fashion, and I talk about final girls and their costumes. So, like, for example, I haven't written about Laurie Strode, but at some point I probably will, because she's iconic. But like, recently I wrote about Audrey from Little Shop of Horrors and like what her costumes say about her character development. So that's something that I do. And also I have a couple of podcasts, one of which is called We Really Like Her, and it's about women in film. Mm-hmm. And it's on hiatus right now, but I did want to say that we have an episode about Halloween H2O that you could listen to if you wanted to, and Alex West from Faculty of Horrors on it, if that's of interest.
Wow, icons beget icons. So how would you describe our personal history, you and me?
Our connective tissue, so to speak, is horror movies. Mm-hmm. is one of our key
absolutely interests. Yeah. And speaking of horror movies, so I've said it in my little spiel at the beginning, but this is a podcast dedicated to talking about horror movies that never got made. And I kind of feel like every horror fan, as you and I are horror fans, have the franchise that is their franchise. No one else can have it. This is for me. And, you know, their dedicated moment. And I think what we're going to be talking about today, if I could be wrong, is your franchise. So today we're going into the horror movie that was never made, Halloween 3D. So this was going to be coming out around the time of the Rob Zombie era of Halloween films. Rob Zombie's Halloween 2 came out 2009. Emily, is this your franchise?
Of the horror biggies, I would say yes. I think like Halloween, the original from 1978, is like my number one movie, period. that has a lot to do with it. But also, I think there's like a few entries in the Halloween series that I really like. And in some ways, like Michael Myers at certain points in the series is like one of the scarier horror villains to me. Mm-hmm. As we'll probably talk about, there are some ways that his narrative gets changed that make him less scary. And I mean, that happens with, as we know, with like so many of our horror villains, like, you know, Freddy becomes a pun master over time, you know, as opposed to like a silent force, Jason becomes this like big hulking guy that you can't defeat. And Michael sort of has a similar journey to Jason in that way. But I like Michael Myers because I think he's simple scary. What I mean by that is like, he feels like a real threat, a man in a mask. You know, it's like not like a supernatural thing. It's just this guy that has killed people. And he's not like a big guy. He's kind of like a normal sized guy. He just goes, picks a mask up at the store, a jumpsuit up at a gas station, you know, like, and then he just kills people. And I think like, to me, that's like, that's scarier than like the supernatural elements.
I feel that for real. You know, I feel like you and I creatively, we think about suburban horror a lot. And I think he just kind of invented it. This invented that feeling that, you know, everyone in our social circles felt when they were 14 in the suburbs walking home from the Dairy Queen. And it was a little too quiet and nothing was going to happen. But if it did, like, I think we'd all be kind of out of luck. And it's that spookiness that I think they really captured for the first time with Halloween.
Yeah, like it's like that moment when Laurie like is like knocking on doors and nobody wants to answer, you know?
Yeah, I was just watching the first one with my friend Samantha, and during that scene, she went, nobody would answer their door. Of course someone would answer their door. And I was like, I don't know if they would. 1978 Haddonfield, Illinois, ? Like, maybe they would, but I think that person might shut off their light. Like, I kind of buy it.
Yeah, well, it's like, do you want to get yourself into that mess, you know? If it is a real person screaming for help, like, you'll have to deal with that. And if it's not, what do they want from you?
Yeah, right? are they tricking you? That's why, as I think most girls probably know, like, scream fire, don't scream help, I'm getting murdered.
Yeah. So
I can't wait to do that one day, to scream fire and it's a lie, I'm really getting murdered. I feel like I've been waiting. And I hope that I get someone else murdered and not me. So today, as I mentioned, we're talking about Halloween 3D, a movie that never happened. And to give you guys a quick overhaul of how we're going to lay out this episode, first, we're going to give you guys sort of a preliminary sense of what Halloween 3D was all about. Then Emily is going to sort of walk us through the Rob Zombie era of the Halloween movies. I'm going to get in depth on some of the other failed Halloween projects along over the years. Emily's going to talk about Halloween 3D, and then I'm going to talk a little bit about Halloween Returns, which was the original recalibration or reboot that happened before Blumhouse came and took over. I'm going to start us off. Halloween 3D, right after Rob Zombie's two-film run with Halloween at Dimension, a third film sort of started to occur. Rob Zombie was very clear after the second film that he would not be returning for a third film. And even though it wasn't a huge financial success, the franchise is a money-making machine, and Dimension wanted to pump out a third movie. Also, without Rob Zombie around, it was sort of their chance to maybe adjust the tone that had really gone off kilter, according to a lot of critics and fans, over the first two Rob Zombie films. So they kind of had the chance to start fresh with this third film. So what did they do? They approached Patrick Lussier and Todd Farmer. Patrick Lussier was actually Wes Craven's protege back in the 90s. He was an editor for Wes on New Nightmare, on Vampire in Brooklyn, Scream, Scream 2, Music of the Heart, Scream 3, Red Eye, and even Cursed. He was the editor on Halloween H2O, so he'd already been dipping around the Halloween franchise earlier. And it wasn't until the classic Dracula 2000 where Patrick would really first start directing in Hollywood. Emily, what is your relationship with Dracula 2000.
I remember seeing Dracula 2000 in theaters with my dad. And I distinctly remember my dad covering my eyes at some point, which is something he started doing when I was like in my like tweens, because I feel like he was like uncomfortable. And I was like, Dad, just don't take me to these movies if you don't want to experience
it. Was it because of like boobs or was it because of gore?
Yeah, definitely from boobs. Because like the thing is, and this is why I think we became horror fans at such a young age, is like we were allowed to watch horror movies. But I feel like when it came to sexy stuff, my dad was like less okay with it. You know, he was like, I remember he also covered my eyes on American Pie too.
That was the big one for us too. It's funny, I had the same situation with my mom and my dad. Yeah, my dad didn't like me watching sex, but my mom didn't like me watching violence. And I got to sort of do, because my parents were divorced, I got to sort of do one with one and one with the other. Anyway, so you saw it in theaters. Do you remember liking it?
I don't have a lot of memory of it, but I actually was considering rewatching it recently because my coworker like watched it for like his bad movie club, and he said like it was actually much better than he expected and he liked it. So I was like, okay, maybe I need to reconsider. I don't know.
I'm a fan, okay? I liked it back then, and I don't know if I would like it again today. I actually am a fan of the direct-to-video sequels it spawned, Dracula 2 Ascension and Dracula 3 Legacy. You'd think that these would be garbage little movies, but they were all written and directed by Patrick Lussier himself. So, you know, there was still a sense of keeping it real and keeping it to what his original vision.
Mm-hmm.
This was also around the time where Wes Craven Presents was becoming a bit of a moniker popular in Hollywood, where they would just slap that on a lot of different horror movies to sort of help sell it. They did this with the Dracula series, and they also did this with a little known movie called They.
I saw that it was on Shudder, I believe. Okay. It's on my list of movies to watch that I haven't watched. I have a list of horror movies that I haven't seen because sometimes you like to rewatch the same movies. I've seen Halloween H2O countless times. Did I need to rewatch it again this year? Maybe not, but no. I did anyways.
The Halloween moment though. I don't like Halloween 1, garbage piece of shit. Halloween 2, why was it made? Halloween H2O, Oscars.
It should have got at least 5. Anyways, They is a movie that you have talked to me about many times. And I do want to watch it. I don't know how that one got through my fingers. I can't really understand because I've seen so many of them. It wasn't in theaters long. Okay.
It's so weird. It was like a very early 2000s moment along the lines of Darkness Falls. Like weird Hollywood CGI movies that didn't last very long and were very strange. That's about the time where Patrick and Todd began working together. They did the horror remake My Bloody Valentine 3D, as well as the action adventure Drive Angry. It was at this time around My Bloody Valentine 3D that they were noticed by Dimension Films, because Dimension Films wanted to make their own 3D slasher film with Halloween, and there weren't a lot of people in Hollywood that sort of had that pedigree or that on their resume except for these two, so it kind of just made sense. Unfortunately, it was never to be. They were working on this for quite a while. Eventually, Dimension Films handed them another property, Hellraiser, and focused their attention from Halloween to that. Both projects, unfortunately, never saw the light of day and are still, I guess in a sense, trapped in development hell. All right, so I would say that is the basic rundown for Halloween 3D. Em, why don't you tell us a little bit about the Rob Zombie era of Halloween and sort of how that got us into the Halloween 3D era?
Well, so I guess Rob Zombie sort of came into the Halloween picture like officially in 2006 when it was announced that he was going to be making a remake of Halloween for Dimension. And it made sense because he'd had success with The Devil's Rejects and House of a Thousand Corpses. And they're both really good movies.
Oh, they're so good. I can see why a studio was like, let's give this guy Halloween. Like it was a mistake in retrospect, like a terrible decision. But I can see why it happened.
both of those movies are very different. So I think like he shows a lot of like ability to do different styles. House of a Thousand Corpses is very like over the top, crazy colors, really gory. Devil's Rejects is too, but it's more realism. Mm-hmm. I always like, we had a conversation about this recently. I feel like it's like Texas Chainsaw 2 first and then Texas Chainsaw after with Devil's Rejects.
Yeah, so I don't want to brush over that because I feel like that's so accurate because I just watched Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 for the first time. You made these parallels and they're so accurate where Texas Chainsaw Massacre 1 feels so much like the dirty road movie of the Devil's Rejects. But the second one is such an evil carnival in vain of Texas 2. Like, if you can feel the inspo sort of slathered on both.
Yeah, and like even like he cast Bill Moseley from Texas Chainsaw 2 as you know, part of that group. So mm-hmm. I think Tobe Hooper is an inspiration for Rob Zombie for sure.
Oh, absolutely.
Maybe more than like a John Carpenter, which is why I think the styles are so different. It made sense that at this time that they would want to do a remake of Halloween because remakes were really hot. Like there was speaking of Texas Chainsaw, there was a Texas Chainsaw remake. This is the era where you had House of Wax and you, mentioned after the fact, like My Bloody Valentine 3D, like it's that whole speech from Scream 4 when she's naming all the remakes. So, and Halloween being such an iconic like horror property, you know, why wouldn't they want to do it? And he said that it was going to be sort of like a prequel and a remake, which is always a confusing thing where you're like, where is this going? And
I feel like because they didn't have the vocabulary of the reboot yet.
I wouldn't say it's a prequel. Like the movie made a lot of money. It like really did well at the box office.
How much
did
it do?
It made $80 million on a $15 million budget. So it was a success at the box office, but critics were kind of mixed on it. And I'm not surprised because like I was mixed on it and I know we were mixed on it when we saw it in theater. I just rewatched it for the first time since we saw it in theaters. Like that's how much I did not like it because like I've said, I've watched Halloween H2O many times, but I only watched that movie once partially because I have such a connection to the original Halloween where I went in with expectations. And those definitely colored my opinion of it. But in the rewatch, like I went in this past week to rewatch it with like trying to be very open and being like, you know what? Maybe there's something to love here. Maybe I'm going to be turned around on it. And I think there are little things that I like about it. But as a whole, I feel like it's a bit of a mess. And there's like things that I really dislike about
it. Yeah, it misses the mark for sure. I get making a project your own, but when it just super doesn't work in tone, like, just don't do it.
You know, going back to what I said earlier about Michael Myers as a character, I think, like, what I like so much about him in the first movie especially, that he's very simple. Like, he's just this, like, evil person. And I think, you know, in this remake, reboot, sequel, prequel, whatever, he is given a backstory and he's sort of given, I guess, the benefit of the doubt to be like, he grew up in a shitty household. Can I swear?
Yeah. Oh yeah, please do.
He grew up in a shitty household. And so he was driven to kill. And, you know, I know that that is a reality for a lot of serial killers, but I think like to me, it took away the scariness of that character and like him having the devil's eyes, just being this, like the blackest eyes, the devil's eyes, you know, that was missing for me. It's like, it was like more of this guy that felt that he needed to take like revenge as opposed to a natural urge to kill.
Yeah, which was so much spookier. This would work for Leatherface. This would have worked for Jason, but this does not work for Michael. It takes away the only thing that makes him scary.
Yeah, because he's not doing one-liners and things like that that like add to his character. He's just this mysterious guy, and I think taking away the mystery is what didn't work for me. But obviously, that's what Rob Zombie was fascinated with, and that's what he ran with, not only with his first movie, but with his Halloween 2 as well. Like, he really went into the backstory of, you know, Michael and Laurie.
Do you think this franchise would benefit from conscious camp? Do you think like a Jason Lives installment would work for Halloween?
My impulse is no, but I love that kind of sequel. And I think like for Jason, it works really well. Like, yeah. I think it's perfect for him. And like, this is not, I'm not hate on Jason, but like Jason doesn't have a personality, so he's easy to meld. And I think obviously Michael doesn't have a crazy personality either, but I just, there's this like empathy that's baked into Jason from the beginning of the series, whereas like trying to change who Michael is intrinsically is like problematic and it gets complicated. And I want to be scared, you know, like, and I think my memory of watching the first Halloween, like 1978, is like I was really, really scared. And when I watched Halloween, Rob Zombie's Halloween, like I'm not scared, I'm grossed out. Like there's definitely some like crazy kills, that part I kind of, I don't want to say enjoy, but like I respect in some way. He definitely can do some shocking kills, but it's not scary, it's just gross.
Gross. And it's like unpleasant, it's mean.
Mm-hmm. yeah that's how I feel about it. But I know the second movie has some fans, and the second movie was less of a commercial success and was also not critically liked. I will say I haven't watched that one since I saw it the first time as well, but what I do remember at least about that one is like I felt like he was like trying something completely different, like and in that way I kind of respect it, as opposed to this first one is very much like a lot of the same notes are being hit but in his style. And it kind of, I'm just like, why does this need to exist? At least with the second one, I'm like, I don't like where this is going, but at least it's trying to do something that he imagined. Like he was like, I'm interested in what, like, would Laurie become like murderous as well?
As you might know, I am a little bit obsessed with, and help me with the pronunciations. Please, you say those names, try those names.
Julianne Moore and Alexandra Bustillo.
So they were originally tapped to do the second Halloween in the new canon. Dimension Films acquired both of their previous efforts, Inside and Livid, for American distribution. And these were pretty grisly little movies. Emily and I saw Livid at the Toronto Film Festival, I'm going to say around 2011. And it had a huge impact on me. And I know it's not exactly well-reviewed or even that well-loved, but there was just something about the mood or the vibe that, like, ooh, like really clicked with me. And I would really recommend it. It's sort of like a vampire ballet haunted house French moment. It's very beautiful.
But you know what's interesting is, like, that movie is set on Halloween night. So I feel like that would have been an interesting, like, test, a little bit of a test. Obviously, completely different than Halloween in terms of that this is, like, more, that's more supernatural. But there's still, like, a horror element in that season. So I feel like that could, like, give them an entry point to possibly doing Halloween.
For sure. It's funny that you say that, because one of the reasons that Dimension took the project away from them was that the tone just wasn't working. And I'm sorry if this is racist, but it's something that I like to talk about a lot, is that Europeans, or basically anyone outside of North America, doesn't fully grasp the tone of Halloween in the right way. Like, I always like to reference the song Halloween by Aqua, where, like, I feel like a lot of people, especially in Europe, they'll, like, associate Halloween with, like, scary slasher movies and stuff like that, rather than the nostalgic, spooky, ooky, autumnal vibe that we sort of get in North America. So I kind of think that's one of the reasons this didn't work, really, for Dimension. And ultimately, at the end of the day, Rob Zombie did come back, and he wrote and he directed the second installment. As Emily said, didn't do great and was not received that well by critics. You kind of said it already, but overall, how do you feel about these films? How do they stack up?
I don't think that I would rewatch them again. And to me, they like exist in a separate canon than the original Halloween. Well, they literally do, but like I don't consider them like entries in the series. Like if we were, you know, sometimes you and I like to rank entries in a series. Like to me, they exist separately, and I couldn't even compare them personally to the, like the original. Even some of the ones that I don't like as much, which we'll get into, but I don't think that they work as Halloween movies. I bet you I would like them if they weren't in the Halloween universe. Canon, but I think because they take those characters and they don't work in the ways that, you know, I think they work so well originally, it doesn't work for me. Like, and Laurie especially, like, we've talked a lot about Michael, but Laurie as a character is one that I do really love. And I think, like, her fire and her, like, anything that's interesting about her is, like, taken away, mm-hmm. especially in the first of Rob Zombie's Halloween movies. The second one, obviously, he's giving her more depth, but the way that he takes her, I, like, find, like, a little bit offensive. Like, I'm just like, why does she have to kill too? Like, why can't she just be damaged by this and not be drawn to also kill? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I think, like, part of the reason I'm drawn to horror in the first place as a woman is, like, the idea of, like, exploring the, like, survivor's experience. I don't know if it's, like, that realistic to think that she's going to turn into a killer after this. I think it's more realistic to be, like, she's going to go into hiding and avoid men or something like that, because yeah. that's what would happen for a real woman. And, of course, every woman is different, but it doesn't feel rooted in reality. And I guess that's the thing, is that Rob Zombie is not necessarily rooted in reality. And I think that, to me, that's the part of Halloween that works, is that there's a little bit of reality still in there baked in.
I agree with that fully. They just don't hit the mark. You know, tonally, they're incorrect. They feel disrespectful kind of to the franchise a little bit, and they are just not for me. And what are you going to do? Although I do like to troll people and say that I like the second one more than the first, which could be true, but I really don't have a lot to back it up.
On my rewatch, I would say I probably would have liked two more. Like I said, I think it's doing some different stuff. The first one, it's just, I will say also, and this is something that carries through with Halloween 3, the script that we read, there's some just offensive stuff in these scripts that, like, I can't get past. You know, like, I'm happy that the, like, horrible, like, homophobic, transphobic stepdad gets killed by, like, little Michael in the beginning of Rob Zombie's Halloween, but still, that character exists, says all this horrible stuff, and there's all this stuff of, like, these teenage girls, like coming on to each other in a very, like, male gazy way. Oh, obviously, so I'm totally here for queerness, but it's not queerness. It's just, like, girls, like, humping each other, like, dry humping each other because that's hot, you know? Yeah. It's not giving me, like, genuine queerness. If it did, I would probably be much more interested in this movie, but
I would be so shocked. It would be, like, the most radical rising thing if it did.
Also, you know, something that I wanted to bring up in general about the Halloween series, and that I think is a good, like, point to jump off with Rob Zombie, is that, like, I think a big part of the success of, like, the first Halloween movie, and even Halloween 2, is, like, the involvement of Deborah Hill. Like, she wrote those scripts with John Carpenter. So I think that those female characters feel a little bit more realistic and a little bit more genuine to the, like, female experience because there's a woman behind them. And I think the problem with so many of these other Halloween sequels is that there's no women involved. And so, like, the female characters, these, like, survivors or final girls, whether it's Laurie or, like, her daughter Jamie, they don't have the same weight and realism that Laurie did in the first, and Annie and all of the girls in the first Halloween did. Like, even if, like, they weren't perfect characters, but they did feel like real characters.
Absolutely.
To me.
You could tell there was like a woman on set making sure that they sounded like real people.
Yeah. And so I think that's missing from Rob Zombie's versions, and I think is definitely missing in this Halloween
3D. Oh, yeah. The Halloween 3D script, which we're going to talk about, which is so lucky for everybody at home because you're never going to get to see it on the big screen. So now you're going to get to walk through it with us. It's not great. Although, spoiler alert, I do kind of wish I could have seen it. It does sound like something I would have watched more than once. So before we head into talking about Halloween 3D in heavier detail, I'm going to sort of quickly run us through some other failed Halloween projects that never really materialized over the years. So quickly, Halloween 2, which I am really excited about, was originally supposed to be set in a high-rise apartment building and shot in 3D. So this was like the original Halloween 2 from 1981, Emily, remember when I wanted to make a horror movie in a high-rise apartment building?
You did?
Yeah, I did. Stairwell. I had like a slasher.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And so this kind of made me excited that it was kind of similar to that. Never mind. There was an alternative pitch for Halloween 4 that had Michael return to all of the characters that got away in the first two. Tommy, Lindsay, Gary. Who's Gary? We'll figure it out. So it was going to be heavily supernatural and cerebral. And at the end of the film, the shape was going to have the ability to actually like shift sizes and turn into a 12-foot tall behemoth and do all sorts of crazy, wacky stuff. But the studio thought this was just too bizarro and cerebral and just kind of got high-boshed. Would have loved to see that. Don't even know what that means exactly. There was an alternative sixth film originally called Halloween 666, The Origin. Incredible.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. That would have featured a new female lead, a reporter come to Haddonfield by the name of Dana, which gives me Emily vibes, kind of.
Wow, thank you.
You're welcome, Dana. Michael almost went into outer space at one point, and rumor has it that John Carpenter came up with this idea, so cool. The Revenge of Laurie Strode was the original title for Halloween 7, which of course ended up being Halloween H2O. Emily and I were just talking about how Halloween, The Revenge of Laurie Strode is just like the perfect name for a Halloween movie. And then at the end of the day, what do they go with? They go with H2O.
It's one of the worst titles. And like, I totally respect anyone that makes fun of the fact that it's called that. Like, I remember watching an interview with like, I think it was David Letterman was interviewing Joseph Gordon-Levitt, who is like the like Drew Barrymore of Halloween H2O.
Right.
He like is in the top billing, but he dies right away. And Dave was like giving him a hard time. Being like H2O, like water, like is there underwater adventures? Like what's the deal, you know? But like, so it's such a weird title, but The Revenge of Laurie Strode, I mean, like that is what the movie is. That is the actual journey of the movie. So, and it would follow the pattern of the other sequels, like the Return of Michael Myers and
The Revenge of Michael Myers, which was number five.
Yeah, and so, like, I think it would have been perfect, but, like, perhaps, I don't, like, do you know more about the reasoning why they, like, didn't go with that title?
No idea at all, but my theory is someone posted a screenshot of the H2O DVD menu recently, and it doesn't even say Halloween, it just says H2O, and it's in black and white, and it looks so much like a thriller. So I do get the sense that Hollywood was trying to, like, sort of market this as a sexy, scream-like thriller. And I think that's sort of where that weird title sort of came in from. It sounds like someone non-creative in a suit came up with it, for sure.
I also have a theory that we know so much about, like, these, like, horror villains, like Michael, Freddy, Jason, whatever. But, like, outside of the horror community, like, the final girls are not always as, like, name recognizable. Like, obviously, like, Ellen Ripley is, mm-hmm. like, somebody that people know. But, like, does everyone, maybe more now that there's, like, these new Halloween movies, but does everyone know Laurie Strode as a name?
That's such a good point. They wouldn't.
Especially since we know that, like, she wasn't in those other sequels that people might have seen, like 4, 5, and 6. Like, mm-hmm. she was mentioned, but she's not
really there. Yeah, absolutely. Not. She wasn't sort of around. There was actually talk that this Revenge of Laurie, the original Halloween 7, The Revenge of Laurie Strode, had a subplot all about the Haddonfield police. And that's weird because all police are bad. There was some bullshit called Halloween 3000, a 2000 sequel to Halloween 2, which should have happened. There was a michaelmyers.com supposedly in the works, incredible, about a webcast streaming live from the Myers house. If it sounds familiar, it's because this plot evolved into Halloween Resurrection. There was a Michael Myers versus Pinhead at one point that was on the fast track after the success of Freddy versus Jason. So if anyone out there that's listening, including my mom, wants to hear an episode about Michael versus Pinhead, please at me. At Devil Hell Pod, that's D-E-V-E-L Hell Pod, and tell me, and then it's going to look like people are listening, and I think that's going to really help us. Okay, and lastly, before we get into the Halloween 3D details, Michael Bay and Platinum Dunes, of course, had an animated pitch ready for Halloween. So these are the guys that were rebooting or remaking every single classic franchise, starting with Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Friday the 13th, Amityville Horror, A Nightmare on Elm Street, really all of, they had all of them basically, but Halloween, which Dimension was holding on to for dear life until around 2015, when they were working on something called Halloween Returns, which we're going to get into a little bit later. So, Em, why don't you tell us a little bit more about the details of Halloween 3D?
So I guess before Patrick Lussier like took over, Alexandra Aja was in talks to do it, and as well as Steve Miner, and Steve Miner did Halloween H2O. As we said earlier, My Bloody Valentine 3D did well, so they went with Patrick and Alex Farmer because they wanted this like 3D Halloween moment, which like I respect. Honestly, kind of liked My Bloody Valentine 3D. Like I don't Same. Love it, but I enjoyed it, and I do like a 3D moment. The idea in 2010 when this was in conversation was that it was going to be an extension of the Rob Zombie universe, and it was going to kind of turn the franchise back to its origins. If you remember, the end of Halloween 2 mm-hmm. is sort of like Laurie is sort of, I guess, locked up for, or she's like caught in the situation where it seems that she might have killed Dr. Loomis.
Yeah.
It's sort of planting the seed for Laurie to possibly become more of a murderous, even helper to Michael, like perhaps collaborating with Michael. So their idea was sort of to like continue that. And then I guess filming was like pretty close to happening. You know, there was like 5 weeks to camera, and then Dimension scrapped it because of budget issues, whatever that means.
What does that mean? Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure shooting in 3D is budgetary, and who knows, like I'm kind of interested in like who the cast would have been. I know we do know that like Tom Atkins was going to play a character, and Tom Atkins was from Halloween 3 Season of the Witch, which is its own entity in the yeah. Halloween series.
Yeah.
But because it's separate from the like Michael Myers timeline, they were going to bring him as like sort of a stunt casting, which is actually something that I think that Rob Zombie does do successfully in his movies, is the stunt casting. Like I love Brad Dourif as like Annie's dad, like Sheriff Brackett.
Oh, it's so good.
That's a great casting. I think Malcolm McDowell as Loomis is actually really good too. But so I think Tom Atkins would have been fun. He would have been this like psychiatrist character, and he in that script has like a kind of like fun death that involves a fish tank. And then they were gonna like slowly do away with sort of the Rob Zombie stuff, including Rob Zombie's mask that he had for Michael. Like they were gonna, there's a scene of him going to like a pharmacy like Michael does in the original to pick out a new mask basically. And he like kills the person working at the store or whatever. So they were really like working towards integrating Rob Zombie stuff, but also doing away with it, which is like quite a move. They had also tapped Lussier at that time to sort of look at Hellraiser, which is very interesting. There's like this Hellraiser Halloween sort of like parallel. Yeah. Mm. Neither that project, the Hellraiser project that he was developing, and Halloween 3D ever came to be. But he did make a movie called Trick, which I actually don't know that I had seen the trailer for until we were doing research for this. And then I watched the trailer, and it's literally about this person that like kills people on a Halloween night and is famous for it. And then it comes back and kills again on Halloween. So it's very much in the same vein as Halloween. But even to this day, like a festival that we were in, Panic Fest, they actually did a reading of Halloween 3D, the script, at I think last January. And so that was something that we were considering going to Panic Fest. It didn't end up working out, which on reflection, we probably should have gone because we wouldn't have been able to travel very much the rest
after
of
that. Yeah.
And we didn't get to go to that reading, which I don't know how I would have felt to hear some of this.
We didn't need to go to a live event for it. It's pretty offensive.
It's rough. It's rough.
Yeah.
Yeah, tell me if you would like, would you want to watch a scene? Well, you know what? I'm not going to even ask the question. I was going to say, would you want to watch a scene of like, there's just like a bunch of naked girls running down a corridor? Like if it was like a bunch of naked dudes running down.
Yeah,
a
I would. I'd watch that.
Well, that's porn, I guess.
Doing something like that to men on camera doesn't have the same weight and issue.
Well, it doesn't happen. So it's almost exciting when it does. Whereas like that the women being naked for such a significant time of their screen time is so, it's just so cliche. Aside from the fact that I find it offensive, it's just like, it's cliche. It's so boring. Like, do something else. If people have to take their clothes off in your movie to make it interesting, then it's not a very good movie as well.
I agree. I think your movie should already be interesting, and then the nudity should just sort of heighten it like salt. I'm going to sort of wrap us up on something called Halloween Returns, which was a natural evolution that Halloween 3D sort of turned into. So in 2010, all talks about this Halloween 3D came to a screeching halt. Patrick and Todd went on to other projects, and the Halloween franchise went nearly 10 years before another film was going to be released. But in 2015, this changed. Dimension Films hired Saw 6 forward writers to rethink the franchise. So this is Patrick Melton and Marcus Dunstan. Halloween Returns was supposed to be, unquote, a recalibration of the Halloween series, and was ultimately what we got later on in life when Blumhouse took over the reins and gave us a sort of reboot sequel in 2018. Halloween Returns, though, this 2015 variation of the project, was really close to happening. And Patrick Melton, Marcus Dunstan, with Dunstan attached to direct, was just a couple weeks away from camera before, I believe, Dimension lost the rights to the series. Now, you'd think they'd have a stronger sense of scheduling when it comes to that. So maybe they scrapped it and then quickly lost the rights. But this was close to them. If they weren't going to strike, the rights to the series were going to be up for grabs. And that's what happened. That's how Blumhouse and Universal got a hold of it. Plot around Halloween Returns was going to start with Michael on death row, about to be injected. When he gets poisoned, his vision blurs, he's about to die, but instead he receives a violent adrenaline hit, breaks free, and goes on a rampage throughout the prison and Haddonfield. That never happened. Instead, of course, we got Halloween 2018. We have our feelings on it. I think we'll talk about that a little bit more at the end. The last thing me and Em are going to do for you today, which I think is kind of fun for you more than us, is we're going to walk you through a little bit what happened in this Halloween 3D script by Lucier and Farmer, which is available online on Reddit if you are at all interested. So, Em, we're going to, why don't we go through this together, but I'm going to start us off. Warning, yeah, this script was sexist as all hell. Like, really gross. Starting off at the very, very beginning. But at the very start of this film, it starts with Laurie at the shed at the end of Rob Zombie's Halloween 2, as Emily was talking about. And Laurie is shown killing Dr. Loomis instead of Michael Myers. It seems like she secretly knows that this is what she did, and we're hinting at the fact that she's evil now, and is she going to be the new Michael Myers, and is she going to sort of succeed him? We're confused. Sheriff Brackett then picks up Laurie when Michael shows up, stops the car, reaches out for Laurie, and takes her with him. They've teamed up now. Is that sort of how you see it, Em?
Yeah, like it seemed like, you know, there's sort of this talk of like, he sort of takes everything from her, like all, like her whole family is gone except for him. So like it leaves her with no other option. This is a classic abuser situation. Leaves her with no other option except for him. So she like feels a kinship.
Kind of cool, actually.
And so that what ends up happening after that is they end up going to the site of like their mother, like Deborah Myers' grave. Okay. Because like that is another thing that I think is more focused upon in the Rob Zombie Halloweens, is like this, like the mother character of Deborah, who's like this one person who does believe in Michael and like seems to support Michael. So like he still has a place in his heart for her. And obviously the Laurie character has just recently learned that she's not actually Laurie Strode. Her name is Angel Myers.
Oh my God, right. Angel Myers.
That's such a like Rob Zombie name, Angel Myers.
It'd be a good drag queen name.
Yes, it would be. It would be very good, actually. That's one to keep in the books. But yeah, so she's just learned that. So I think it's like, you know, if you learn that you're adopted for the first time and you're like, oh shit, like
identity is crumbled. Yeah.
Right. So I think she's like, I'm gonna learn more. So she goes to the grave site with Michael, and they like basically are like digging up Deborah. And then this group of like other new characters comes in.
Right. I also want to say that from this point on, Michael is carrying around the corpse of his dead mom for like a good portion of this script, which I'm not mad at because it's outrageous. It's like almost John Waters-y.
I mean, it would be cooler if it was.
Yeah, that's true.
I would like to see the John Waters take on the Halloween.
Oh my God.
That's one I'm waiting to see. At least it wouldn't be like fat phobic. In fact, it would be fat positive.
Oh, it would be so fat positive.
And it would be like queer. It would just be like everything that I'm missing from the Halloween franchise. John Waters could bring John. Let's talk. He would not touch that with a 10-foot pole. But anyway,
I think he would. I think he's desperate to let someone make a new feature. He's always talking about it. So you were saying we're going to meet sort of our new leads at this point?
Yes. So there's a new group of kids. You meet them like in a basement. And basically the first thing we see of these new kids is these two girls making out. And like, I will just say throughout the script, there's like horrible descriptions of women in it. Like, it's like just stuff like, I think I wrote it down. Hold on. Oh, this is for a different character that comes later. But like literally character description is like fucking hot. It's like, is a character description. It's like what? Anyways, it's like... like 30 years old, comma, fucking hot. And you're like, okay. Like really? That doesn't tell me anything.
It's like a therapist or something too. Yeah.
Anyways, it's a psychiatrist. So, but these characters are teens and there's these two girls that are making out. One of them is supposed to be like a more emo girl. And then there's this girl, Amy, who is going to like be the new heroine of this movie, at least. And they're making out in front of their boyfriends. And it's meant to just be like, sort of like, I don't know if it like is said, whether it's like a dare or something, whatever. It's very male gazey. And like, there's a hint that there might be a queerness to it. Like where like, I think the Amy character is kind of into it. And like, she says something like, we should do this again sometime. But like, yeah. At the end of the day, it feels very exploitive. And then there's another character that like never comes back. That's like described as like, I think chunky. Is that correct?
Yes. There's actually a man and a woman. There's like these very fat phobic couple-y characters that like are fucking while eating a pizza or something. It's horrifying.
Yeah. And then she's on her period and he's like, whatever, I'll fuck you anyways.
Yeah. It's so grotesque. It's like the fat is the grotesque, which as a fat person, it's a little triggering. But at least they're fucking. At least we got fatties fucking and I can respect that to some degree.
And as far as I know in the script anyways, like they don't die. Like we don't continue to follow them. We just know that they're fucking. So good for them, I guess.
Good for them, yeah.
But still, the way that they're described in the script is truly disgusting. Horrible. Yeah. And so anyways, Amy and her boyfriend and her other friend that she was just making out with, you know, casually, they like go to the cemetery. They're like doing some like Halloween pranks, like with eggs and TP and stuff like that.
Classic.
And they run into who else?
Oh my God.
Michael and Lori.
And Deborah, the corpse.
And the corpse of
Deborah. Who I would want to play in the script, to be honest.
Yeah. Well, they could have done more with Deborah, in my opinion, but.
Do you think it would have been Sherry Moon Zombie?
I mean, but if Rob wasn't involved, would she want to do it?
The answer is yes.
But also, like, what does her corpse look like after all this time? You know, would she still look sexy like Sherry Moon Zombie? I don't know. They meet up with Michael and Lori. There's a bit of a bloodbath there. And what is kind of a cool scene is, like, Amy gets locked into the coffin of Deborah. Mm-hmm. And she's stuck in there with her decapitated boyfriend. So like, I think there's like a line of literally like she's choking on her boyfriend's blood or something like that. And then there's a bunch of like head cap decapitations, not just that.
I think there were a sum of three 3D head decapitation moments in the script. Again, I'm not like furious.
No, we also meet this new psychiatrist character named Josie, who is described as fucking hot, and later like bangs another like cop in a scene unnecessary. Oh,
yeah. Really gross. And Lori is fucking an orderly, which is really inappropriate and disturbing.
Yeah.
We'll get to there.
Long story short, like Sheriff Brackett gets away from this like massacre that is continuing that same night with Michael and Laurie.
Oh, when he gets away by shooting the corpse of Michael's mom.
Yeah, like, so the corpse has been, you know, tampered with, desecrated, which is, of course, going to make Michael mad. And then there's an ambulance scene where Amy has been rescued by this cop from the, like, you think maybe she's going to be dead in the coffin, but she's not. She's brought back. Okay. And then in the ambulance, she's, like, there's more people that are killed. And essentially, that this section ends with Michael getting set on fire, and there's like some sort of like 3D effect with his like that his devil's eyes, the blackest eyes, you know.
Yeah, like you zoom into the blackness of his eyes. It's very funny.
Long story short, we assume that Michael has like died
again, you
know, again by fire, like he did at the end of Halloween 2, the OG Halloween.
And 2. I want to say Halloween Resurrection.
I can't confirm that because I haven't watched Halloween Resurrection in a while. But I believe you. And then Laurie kills Sheriff Brackett.
Wow.
Which is sort of making you go, who is Laurie? Is she
Wait, really did she do it out of evilness or was it like a mistake? I don't remember.
I don't remember. Don't think it matters.
Doesn't.
And then the point is, this is just the start of the movie. Then we go a year later to, of course, Halloween season. And I don't believe it goes right to like October 31st. I feel like it's like the 30th because there's this recurring bit of like these radio ads that are like, there's a dance coming up on Halloween. Don't miss it or whatever.
Yeah.
And basically we find like Laurie and Amy are both at this hospital.
Yeah. Somehow they're in the same asylum. And Amy is about to what? Be checked out?
And then there's this drama where she's being released. Laurie is also there. And then they have like a cat fight where there's literally something where it says Amy kicks Laurie in the cunt is something that is in the script. It's horrible. It's really bad. There's a bunch of other women or young girls that are like at this asylum and they all are like very caricature-y. They're like very like over the top. And like the mental health representation in this is very like, it's not great. It's not great. It's bad. And there's also, we find out that Michael is not dead. Of course, he's still kicking after everything. And his mask is now burnt to his face.
Oh, ouchie.
Yep, like Jason sort of style. Basically, the climax is back at the asylum. We learn that there's been all these other deaths that have been like sort of linked to Michael Myers. And he's back again and he's coming for the asylum. Is he coming for Amy because he wants to finish what he started? Is he coming for Laurie because he wants to have his sister back and wants to team up with her again? We're supposed to sort of try to see what happens. And then, like, this all gets muddied because there's a bunch of stuff at the asylum. Then they go to this, like, Halloween dance party thing.
Yeah.
And which is kind of anticlimactic. Basically, again, we're going through these themes of, like, is Laurie going to be the new Michael? Like Amy, even who is should be mad at Laurie because she was sort of part of this massacre that killed her boyfriend and friends. Amy's trying to get Laurie to like come back with her and sort of the Michael.
Laurie and Amy relationship is bizarre, right? Like,
yeah.
Is there like, there's some romance element in your mind or am I inventing?
I don't think that there's a romance element. I think that there's moments where they're like literally like physically close to each other, which I think was male gazey. That's the way that I read it. Anyways, I think it was meant that they're supposed to be like, you know, parallels to each other and that they've both gone through this trauma, but I don't know that it's supposed to be actually like queer, but that's not.
I think you're absolutely right. Or maybe there's a bit of like a Kristen Alice handoff, like in Nightmare 4, where like you have both of these final girls and it's sort of like handing the franchise off to this like new character.
Yeah. So like clearly they were trying to be like, Amy is going to be the new Laurie of the Halloween franchise. Because basically the movie ends with Laurie getting killed off. Like she cuts off her hand because she's like She's tied to Amy, and she cuts off her hand so that she's no longer tied to Amy. And then I guess she's dying, and she basically asks Michael kind of to kill her, and he does. And then Michael is still on the loose at the end, which
all right, it's a mess. It's a hot, hot mess. But would it have been better than the Rob Zombie films? I'm gonna say yes. Could it have worked out? Maybe. There definitely needs to be a sensitivity reader taking a look at the script.
Yeah, I feel like the word trauma is used many times in the script, and I feel like this is a movie that, like some of the other movies in the Halloween canon, like to purport that they're talking about trauma in a genuine way, but it seems like trauma, like exploitation of trauma as opposed to exploration of trauma. And I feel like that is what this movie is, and that's what some other entries in the...
Oh, I agree with that fully. Are. On this podcast, we want to get to our conclusions of, does this project that's been stuck in development hell, does it have a shot at the green light? Could this project get made? Emily, what do you have to say?
No, because I think we're too removed from the Rob Zombie canon of of Halloween, and now we're fully in this like new Blumhouse version of Halloween. So I feel like it's not gonna happen.
Oh yeah, I agree. This one's dead in the water, and I think that's okay because it's not good. It doesn't understand the tone of Halloween, just like Halloween, both of the Rob Zombie films didn't. It's disrespectful, it's gross, it's mean, and it's not scary.
It's not scary at all. It, you know what? I really feel like this movie felt, just from reading the script, felt more action-y than horror. Like there's like this horror action element that I think takes away any scariness to me. It's like I think of Michael being like an action hero, like even a predator kind of character, where it's like, you know, he's not gonna die, so like there's just crazy scenarios, and that's not scary. If this character is always going to be alive, or like whatever alive means in this supernatural universe of Halloween, like then it's not scary, because there's you're just like, oh, he's always gonna live and I'm fucked, you know? The stakes are just so unrealistic. So
I agree with that fully. You know, we were talking about what makes the franchise so scary and so great, and it's that subtle suburban, very North American vibe. And this couldn't be farther from that. You know, this is much more gritty, disgusting, over the top action mess. And not to say that that genre or those vibes don't have its place in the horror genre. Obviously, they do. They just don't have a place in the Halloween franchise. Em, what do you think of Halloween 2018?
So we saw Halloween 2018 at TIFF, like the world premiere we saw.
And like, where were we? Like, who were we close to?
We were like a couple rows behind Jamie Lee Curtis. So it was like truly exciting. We were really jazzed. Like, I mean, this was like a huge moment for us, and I like, you know, one of the things I like about the franchise, as you may have figured out, is Laurie Strode, and I love Jamie Lee Curtis. So I was like really excited for her return, because I love H2O, and I think like that movie like has a lot of development for Laurie. So I was like, okay, what are they going to do with Laurie now? And I think we knew very limited things going into it. Like we'd you know, maybe seen the trailer, but like we didn't know enough. I had high expectations and I was excited, and I feel like Jamie Lee was excited, so that made me really excited about it. I know we were both disappointed by Halloween 2018.
Yep, I would agree with that. What I was most disappointed in is how many people actually liked it and how well it did. Although it's always good to see a franchise doing well in our genre, because it helps the rest of us out. But yeah, I'm not a huge fan. It also didn't hit the mark. I think we'll always have Halloween H2O, and I think Halloween 2, and even sometimes Halloween 4, 5, 6. I'm grateful for what we do have.
Yeah, I agree. And I do think like there's a lot of narrative about sort of the trauma exploration in Halloween 2018. And I, like, it's not to say that that's not touched upon. It is touched upon, but I think it's just touched upon. And I think, like, I don't think it's dealt with enough. I think the problem for, there's many things I don't like about Halloween 2018, but I think one of the things that really bothers me is how scattered it feels. Like I feel like there's kind of like three different movies happening. There's like Laurie's story, there's these podcasters, there's Laurie's granddaughter who's sort of like shaping up to be this new final girl. And then there's like Michael himself. So there's just a lot going on. And I think, you know, what works about Halloween H2O for me is like, it's Michael and Laurie. Like that's what the story is. And I think like at the end of the day, like that's what makes Halloween unique, is I think like none of the other franchises, like with the exception, I guess, of Scream, which has like the final girls throughout, like I feel like it's always about the horror villain. Whereas mm-hmm. like in Halloween, we have this recurring female character who goes up against our villain and has a complicated and familial relationship with this villain that enriches the story, my opinion.
It's so intimate.
It's intimate.
It's almost romantic in a weird way.
Yeah. And I think like in some ways that has been interpreted in ways that don't quite work, which is how I feel about the Rob Zombie ones. And I, you know, they took out the sister element for this new Halloween 2018. And I understand why they did that. But I think the way that they went with Laurie's character, like just didn't feel, it felt like, I always describe that character or that version of the character as like, sort of like a Sarah Connor.
So real, Em. That's really good.
You know, that's like
so on point in a way that is disappointingly accurate. Yeah.
Like Sarah Connor in T2 and onwards. Like it's like that sort of like a really hardened character. And that's not to say that people that survive trauma can't get to that place. I think that that's, but maybe not to that extreme. And I think what really works about Halloween H2O is that it's realistic, like, that character is still hardened, but not in a way that feels like detached from reality. It feels like rooted in reality, where like she's hardened in the way that she won't let her son do things or go out. Not like she has a bunch of guns in her house and like has,
yeah,
like,
so many guns. The gun stuff put a bad taste in my mouth. Although I will say the way that they're setting up Halloween Kills, where it's the three generation of Strode women. And no one has to be convinced that the danger is real because we just went through that. I hate that in movies where it takes like half of a film to convince. It's like how many minutes do we need to devote to like convincing Judy Greer that there's actually something dangerous happening? So maybe the second film, you know, maybe it'll hit the mark. Maybe it'll be lightning in a bottle.
I think that like they had potential there for sure with like, I love the idea that Laurie had a daughter and they have a contentious relationship. And part of the reason they have a contentious relationship is because Laurie was like kind of like, you know, had mental health problems after that resulted from the trauma and like made her daughter learn how to do survivalist stuff. Like that could have been really interesting. But in that sense, you like almost think she should have believed her mom, or like, I guess she's dealing with her own trauma from dealing with that with her mom as a child. But I think like, they really should have leaned into that. Like, imagine a Halloween 2018 that was just the three women in the Strode house, just there, and they're like hiding out for the night because that's what they do every Halloween, because that's what like Grandma Strode does. And then Michael comes a calling and they basically have like a sort of the Strangers, the Purge kind of situation with Michael. You know,
I love it. I love it so much. Put it somewhere nice and remote so it's hard for them to get out. And there you have your movie. I think that would have been really cool.
Yeah, and to play with like, is this real or am I imagining it? Like I think that that's what the original Halloween does really well, is it's like, is this really happening, or like, is someone playing a trick on me? Which is the whole spirit of Halloween. Are the monsters real or are they imagined?
Yeah, I love that. Well, you know what? It's never too late. I think it's one of these franchises that doesn't really seem to die down. Why, out of all the franchises, is Texas Chainsaw Massacre the one that is, and that always has a new project coming out? Did you see that there's a new one?
Mm-hmm.
And like, I'm not angry, like, it's not the worst franchise, but like, where's Freddy? Where's Jason, where's whatever? Where are my boys? You know, I miss my babies.
Freddy's the complicated one, though, because Freddy is partially about the person that plays Freddy, and if it's not him, it doesn't work.
I know. Well, listen, I wouldn't say that the worst thing about the Nightmare on Elm Street reboot was Jackie Earle Haley. Like, I wouldn't say that would be the thing that didn't work about the film, other than the makeup effects.
Yeah, but anyways, I think that's a challenge. Whereas, like, I get why Michael is something that you can play around with, because he doesn't speak and he's in a full costume, not just a mask, but like a full outfit. But I think people like think too much about Michael Myers and should just keep a simple approach. Like I said at the beginning, he's simple, scary, and the more complicated you make him, the less scary you make him. So.
That's genius. That's beautiful. That's gorgeous. And like, I think that really hits where we need to hit. So fuck Halloween altogether. You're a filmmaker. You're talented. You're beautiful. If you were given the ability to make your own shitty direct-to-video installment of any, you know, horror franchise from the canon, what would it be?
Extension of the franchise. So, like, could be a reboot, could be a...
I mean, listen, you can do what you want to do. I encourage to stay in the original canon with, you know, with a number, with a number at the end of the title. But if you want a reboot, if you want a prequel, you do you, baby.
I would like... I think I just love Halloween H2O. I've obviously said it many times, and I feel like I wouldn't mind seeing what's up with Laurie Strode as we see at the end of Halloween H2O.
Cool.
And maybe she's still haunted by Michael, but he's not real. And it's just like she's dealing with like the ghost of Michael, but not actually the ghost of Michael, but he's there.
I hear you. Yeah.
You know? And I've said this to you before, I feel like something I've always thought about is like a support group for like final girls or something like that, which I know has been kind of explored in lots of different texts, but I think like...
It's still very cool.
To see as a woman, I think about like what it's like when I'm like walking home alone in the dark. And like how automatically I'm a little bit nervous, and I like don't, if I see a man coming too close to me, I like will often like twitch sides of the street, or I'll turn my headphones off. Sometimes I'll keep them on physically, but I will turn the volume down so that I make sure that I'm like ready to go. And it's like, what would be navigating like a night home, like as Laurie Strode, having dealt with Michael, having killed Michael at the end of H2O, but still feeling the effects of that. And also, like, you could bring Josh Hartnett back if you really wanted to, because what happened to him? I want them to bring Michelle Williams back, because quite frankly, I think Michelle Williams needs to be in a horror movie. Like, I'm looking for Michelle Williams in a like The Others type film. Like, where is that?
Finally, the Oscar goes to.
Right. So I think like Laurie is like something that is a character that I'm really fascinated by, and I'd love to continue her story. Obviously, I don't think that will ever quite happen because of what's happening, but I think I really dug what was going on in H2O, and I think I would like to see something in a similar vein. Get a woman, please, for the love of God.
Mm-hmm.
Like, bring more women into these reboots, these sequels, these especially ones that are like driven by female characters. I just think
all of them, but yeah.
It's truly nuts. I'm not saying that men can't write interesting female characters, but I am saying that. I am saying that, you know, like I love Sydney Prescott and Gail Weathers.
Yeah, me too.
Who are a part of the Scream universe, and they're not written by women. But I think like especially
gay men count. Sorry to interrupt.
Well, that's That's true. There's Kevin Williamson. The Kevin Williamson effect, I mean, he was also like an early, in early development on Halloween H2O too. So
I think he came up with the title, The Revenge of Laurie Strode, but I couldn't.
He did. So I think like that is what makes Halloween H2O work, even though it's not his full script at the end of the day. I think like there was a touch of respect for women, you know?
Yeah. More than respect, like adoration.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's what's missing in some of these other Halloween sequels. It's like women are not taken seriously, or they're turned into these like otherworldly characters, whether sexually or like as like vehicles of like change and stuff. Yeah. And so I don't think that works. So I would love to see like a woman come in and try a Halloween entry, if we're going to go there. At the end of the day, though, I really, nothing will compare to when I watched Halloween H2O and saw Michael's head get chopped off. Like, to me, that was the end of the franchise.
I agree.
Remains the end of the franchise for me. And I think it's like a fucking cool, powerful moment. And I don't think that we need to put so much stock into these, like, keeping these guys alive. Give me that new horror villain. I don't need another Michael movie. I don't necessarily need like another Jason movie. I'll watch them. It's not to say that I don't need them, but I want something original. And like, I think that's what I come back to when I think of these things, is like, think about how great the original Halloween was, 1978, because it was its own thing. It was simple. It wasn't caught up in the lore. It was just trying to scare you. And that's what I'm looking for.
I couldn't agree with you more. Em, you're the best. Thank you so much for talking with me about Halloween 3D today. I knew that you would have something to say, because I know how passionate you are about these movies. So I really think you were the right choice. Is there anything in this world that you want to plug, be it again or for the first time?
Well, right now, I am just writing my monthly column for Nightmare on Film Street called Final Girl Fashion. So check that out. I do it every month and it's always about a different final girl. One of the recent ones that I wrote that I'm proud of is about Crimson Peak, which is a movie that I really love and I know a lot of people love too, but like is getting some more love than it did when on first release. So yeah, that was one I was really proud of. So if you want to check that out, I would love it. Otherwise, I don't really have anything else crazy to promote other than we have our movie that sometimes appears at festivals.
Yes, we sure do. Okay, well, this was so fun. And for you listening at home, all I want to say is thank you for listening. If you could please do me the favor of liking, subscribing, sharing, telling your mom, all of that stuff, it really helps. And I hope that you're going to keep listening to our new episodes of Development Hell.